Item number seven, report and possible discussion on legislative update by Matt Phillips, Government and Customer Relations Manager.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm going to talk a little bit about what passed during this last session, and then get a little bit into the current special session and kind of tell you all what's going on with that. I think back in April, kind of the remark I made to y'all is that the legislative update would be short because pretty much everything was going to die, and I wasn't that far off. If you look at statistically between sessions, this past session saw fewer bills passed than probably five or six before that. So there was a lot of animosity between the House and the Senate, which led to a lot of things not passing. A few things actually did pass. For the most part, from a broad standpoint, very little of it will have any effect on us, but it's just stuff that we watched. I'd like to say this before every legislative update. This is by no means a comprehensive list of everything. It's just kind of a snapshot. So give you an idea of some of the things. As it relates to groundwater, they passed some legislation laying out a better schedule for when groundwater districts have to do their desired future conditions. They changed some of the rules at TCEQ regarding water quality permitting. The way the law read right now, TCEQ had to attempt to line up discharge permits in a river basin to where they expired at the same time so that they would be reviewing them all at the same time. They've never actually been able to do it. It's never worked. They've always ended up extending permits from year to year, and it's never been a process that TCEQ was able to make happen, and so they basically just got rid of that in the statute. That'll only affect us to the extent that we hold the discharge permit. Chapter 11 cleanup, I talked about this back in April. There was some old language in statute with regard to filing water right permits that required you to file old maps on onion paper and stuff like that. So the legislature went through and cleaned some of that up. Regional water planning groups will now have to comply with open meetings and open records. I think it was always assumed that they did, but there were some that did not and felt that they did not have to comply with open meetings and open records, particularly their committees. So they will have to from now on. Groundwater Conservation District Permit Administrative Completeness. What that means is there were some groundwater districts where folks would file a permit and the district would never declare it administratively complete. They would just keep asking them for information until the person finally just withdrew their permit. And so what that bill basically says is once you've filed a permit request at a groundwater conservation district, they can't change the rules or continue asking you questions. There has to be a deadline by the time that, or deadline by which they decide your permit is administratively complete, and then they have to consider it like they would any other permit. This one's actually kind of interesting. It allows for an expedited water right permit process for someone who is using desalinated water. So say along the coast, a large user decided to implement a desalination project and they also held a surface water right, they could get an expedited permitting process to move some of the diversion points associated with that surface water right, which makes a lot of sense for someone who wants to offset the cost of a desal project by selling water from their surface water right because it allows them to move a diversion point more quickly. So that's actually one of the few probably beneficial or good things that came out of the session as it relates to water. And then the legislature made some revisions to water planning. For the most part, they're pretty small. They just looked at probably the biggest one that makes a lot of sense is removing projects from the water plan that no one's ever going to do. It requires the regional water planning groups to actually designate projects as essentially dead if no one wants to pick them up. And we've seen that in Brazos G be an issue with some of the reservoir projects. Public entity legislation, this is just stuff that affects local governments. Probably the oddest one is this one, and we will actually have to comply with it. We're going to have to put a provision in our contracts that makes it very clear that any entity we contract with has never and does never plan to boycott Israel. We have to do it. It's not a big deal. Won't be a problem for us. We'll put it in our contracts, and folks will have to stipulate that they never have. So, and if you have, then you end up on a bad list at the comptroller's office of entities that have boycotted Israel. Yes, sir.
Who carried that bill?
Van Taylor, I believe, in the Senate, and I'd have to look up the House author. I don't remember. Video conference meeting requirements. We've rarely ever done those, but basically what that says is if you're doing a video conference meeting and the other end of the video conference goes out, you have to stop the meeting, or you can continue the meeting so long as a quorum is present, but if the video conference going out results in you losing a quorum, you have to stop the meeting. Apparently that was an issue. They made some very good revisions to public information law. And all of those were very positive for those of us that have to comply with open records requests. What it essentially says, and it was for instances where folks were filing multiple open records requests but refusing to pay for the information. They would file a request, refuse to pay for that one, and then just file another one. And what it basically says is you have to have paid and completed the first request before you have to start working on the second one. There's also a bill passed that allows you to answer an open records request by saying this information is available on our website, so we don't have to specifically send it to you. You can just go look at it. Contracting with companies related to Sudan, that's, again, similar to the Israel thing. It just makes it clear in statute that you're not supposed to contract with companies that have provided aid to terrorist-related organizations and countries like the Sudan. So, again, it'll be something as a public entity we have to comply with. Won't be a problem because we don't do it anyways. They expanded the ability for entities to hold closed sessions for IT security. Right now, that actually only applied to state agencies, and so they expanded it to all political subdivisions. 625 is a really interesting one. It created at the Comptroller's Office a special districts database, and the purpose of it is for taxpayers to be able to find the entities where they live that can assess an ad valorem tax on them and what their tax rate is, who their board is, all that kind of thing. We technically, even though we do not tax and even though we would never tax, fall under this bill and will have to provide information for this database to the Comptroller's Office. The reason that we do is our enabling statute says that if we're ever going to assess an ad valorem tax, we have to hold a vote. It's an antiquated portion of our enabling statutes. We would never assess an ad valorem tax, nor would we be able to hold a vote. We exist in 72 counties. I don't even know what that would look like. Don't even want to know. But because we technically have that authority, we're going to have to comply with that. And then I talked a little bit about this one back in April. It's the Buy America bill, which essentially requires public works contracts or public works projects to look to Buy America steel before buying anything else. The way that the bill ended up passing, because it had a whole lot of opposition from folks who were seeking to implement projects, whether they be large water projects or other public works projects, is that, one, it is going to be delayed until May of 2019, so it's not going to be an immediate implementation. Two, it does not apply to political subdivisions or cities or counties, so it doesn't apply to local governments. So we will continue to be able to do projects how we've done them before. Where it would apply to a public entity or a city or a local government like us is, in order to get funding through the Water Development Board, it will apply to all of their loan programs. So when you go get a loan through the Water Development Board, you'll have to comply with the Buy America or U.S. Steel requirements. Now, there are outs. Probably one of the biggest ones is if it's determined that complying with the U.S. Steel requirement would result in you not being able to find the material in sufficient quantities, you won't have to do it. If it increased the cost more than 20%, you won't have to do it. And then there's a really big broad catch-all that says if it's not in the public interest, you won't have to do it. Now, how you determine that, I don't know, but it at least gives folks that out. So, appointments, obviously this will be of interest to some folks. The Ethics Commission is now going to be required to remove the phone numbers and children's names of a person filing a personal financial statement from that before they put it online. Right now, they just throw them out there, so they're going to have to take those off. House Bill 791 allows for the filing of personal financial statements by mail, so some folks won't have to go through the Ethics Commission software. You'll actually be able to file those by mail. I believe September 1st. Right, and a lot of folks were unhappy about the software. So it gives folks the option. A lot of folks, I think, will still use the software, but it allows people to be able to go the other way. I believe it's J.M. Lozano. So, disclosure of appointment applicant info. This allows for certain info to be redacted from your appointment application, such as home address and phone number. Right now, that stuff would just be released. And then probably the most important one is the appointee holdover prohibition. Now, this one's got to go to the voters in November, but it ends the holdover provision that currently is allowed in law and in the Constitution. So the way it would work is if your term ends during a regular session of the legislature, you would have to either be reappointed or replaced by the end of that session of the legislature, or your seat is considered vacant. Okay? If your appointment ends or your appointment expires during the interim, you have to either be reappointed or replaced by the end of the next regular session, or your seat is deemed vacant. Right now, folks are obviously allowed to hold over until there's a replacement. This would end that provision in the law. Hmm. And that'll take effect if the voters approve it in November. If the voters approve it in November, because it'll be a constitutional amendment. So let's talk about the special session. As I said, a lot of things died during the regular session, and some of the more important things that died were some sunset bills for some pretty important agencies, probably the most important of which is the Texas Medical Board, which licenses doctors, which is a pretty big deal. And what essentially happened is there was an agreement on the Texas Medical Board's overall sunset bill. And when that usually happens, what the legislature does is they have what's called a safety net bill that catches all those entities who the legislature doesn't necessarily want to sunset, but they can't agree on their sunset legislation. So they'll just continue them for 2 years and come back and do it again next session. Well, what happened is the safety net bill got caught up in a lot of the arguments about school finance, property tax reform, bathrooms, all the stuff that the House and the Senate couldn't agree on. And the safety net bill ended up basically being held hostage. The House wanted to pass it, but it died over on the House calendar. The Senate decided that, well, we'll pass our version of it if you'll pass XYZ, all these things that we want you to do. The House said no. And so basically it turned into a giant game of chicken where the safety net bill ended up not passing. And so where we were left at the end of session was you had an agency that in the medical board and a couple of other smaller boards, dental board and the psychology board, that were going to have to start unraveling their agency on September 1st. Well, obviously nobody wanted that to happen, so the governor had to call the legislature back. When he did, he issued two proclamations. He called the legislature back to first finish this, and what he said is as soon as the Senate passes bills that will continue those agencies, I will add all of this other stuff to the call. Now, obviously, this is a big list of stuff, and note, that's just the first page. This is the second page. Yeah. So total, there's about 20 different things that the legislature's been asked to look at or that is germane to the call during this special session. Now, to give you a flavor of kind of where they are, they started on July 18th. They'll end on August 17th because special sessions are 30 days. Now, the governor can call an unlimited number of them, but they only last 30 days apiece. The Senate has passed pretty much every one of these things. They're the more conservative body. They have a majority of Republicans. They pass pretty much everything 20-11. So everything's pretty much rushed through there. The House has passed the sunset legislation and one bill related to reporting on certain abortion procedures. And they have another four bills on their calendar for today, but that's it. That's all they've done. I think where we'll likely end up is four or five of these things will end up passing related to overriding local ordinances. I think the sunset bills will pass. I don't think everything will pass, particularly not the infamous bathroom bill. The House has made it very clear that they're not interested in that, that they're not going to even look at a version of it. So I have a funny feeling that even though the Senate's passed that one and they're going to put a lot of pressure on the House to pass something, it probably won't. And I think where you'll end up, and I was talking about this with David this morning, is everybody will get a trophy out of this session, and here's how. The governor will get a trophy for this list itself, for just having called the legislature back to address all of these things. He can say, look, I can only call these guys back to do this. I can't make them do it, but at least I called them back and told them they needed to. The Senate, or Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, will get a trophy for the Senate having passed all of this stuff, because they have. And he can say, look, I can't control the House, but at least I passed all of this. Speaker Strauss will get a trophy because his constituency, which tends to be the more moderate base of the Republican Party, doesn't want any of this stuff passed, and he's likely to be the reason it all dies. So again, everybody will win. Everybody will walk away feeling like they won. Because the sunset legislation will have passed, I doubt there will be another special. I really do. I don't think that the governor is going to call the legislature back for any of these things. So I think that hopefully... He could call him back for that, but I just don't see it. The Senate has passed a version of property tax reform, but just like during the regular session, the House and Senate are so far apart on what they think that should look like. I don't know that he would call him back for another special to try to address that if they can't figure it out during this 30 days. So hopefully We've got about two or three more weeks to go, and hopefully that's all they do, and they'll go home and not do any damage. As far as we go, there's nothing in the special that really affects us for the most part. We're tracking some things. You can file any bill in the special. It can be related to anything, but it has to be germane to the call to be passed. There has been a lot of water legislation filed during the special, but it's just a bunch of stuff that got vetoed during the regular that the author of those bills is upset that it got vetoed, so he's refiled it. It's not germane to the call, and the odds of it passing are really slim. So, and none of it's particularly bad for us. So. I think with that, that's all I've got, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
The BRA goes before the sunset next session?
It would be in 2020 in advance of the 2021 session. So it won't be next session. It'll be the one after that. So we're set to be sunsetted as if we were to be abolished in 2021, which means they look at us in 2020, basically, unless that schedule changes, which the legislature can't change.
Sure. And you said there was an author that refiled all his bills. Who was that?
The chairman of the House Natural Resources Committee, Lyle Larson, had several of his bills vetoed at the end of the regular session. He was not happy about the fact that his bills were vetoed, particularly for what he thought the reason was. And the reason was he had also filed several bills related to ethics and appointments as it relates to the governor. And he feels that the vetoes of his water legislation were related to the filing of those bills. And obviously he's unhappy about that and has been very public in his unhappiness about his bills being vetoed. So, but that said, I think that makes it unlikely that his refiled water legislation will pass. Again, it's also not germane to the call. So,
anybody
would
else?
The bathroom bill, as the Senate has passed it, would it affect Brazos River Authority?
Because we're a political subdivision of the state, technically, yes. But really what it says is that we could not pass a rule, ordinance, policy, which obviously we don't pass ordinances anyways, but we couldn't pass an internal policy that allowed for the protection of a class as it relates to transgender folks being able to use whatever bathroom they want. We would obviously never do that anyways. So to that extent, it affects us because we'd have to generally comply with it, but the things that it outlaws you from doing, we would never do anyways. At least I doubt we would ever do.
Anybody else? Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.